Welcome to the Lunch Hour with Mr. Credit.
What do you even do around here besides interrupt people?
And today, it's Thankful Thursday.
Let's put a smile on that face.
Where we give back by giving you all the financial secrets you need to succeed.
Join us or die.
And now, the Lunch Hour with Mr. Credit on ESPN Radio 1700.
Just move on up and keep on.
All right, welcome to your lunch hour. Mr. Credit is here, guaranteeing to make you smarter than everyone else. I hope you made some money today. I sure should have. I'll tell you that story in a second. I want to welcome into the studio my financial planner from freeinvestmentaudit.com. Dan Osgood is in the house. Dan, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing better than you.
Okay, yeah. Well, you're going to have to listen to this story again. So here's what happened. Weibo, the Chinese Twitter, which we've talked about all week, we told you was IPOing today, was scheduled to IPO between $17 and $19 a share. We thought that it would hit $25 this week and $30 by next week. That's what we thought. For those of you who have speculation money, who have play money, this was one to take a look at. I myself was willing to jump in this morning, had plans to buy with a limit order at $20 a share. However, when I woke up right before 6:30, when the market opened, I noticed that it actually IPO'd at $17 on the low end of the spectrum. You never see that, Dan. I mean, you almost never see that. Yeah, not for a stock with this much hype.
Not with the IPOs that have been coming out lately and flying so high. It's rare that you'd see them working towards the lower end.
Very rare. And in fact, completely caught me off guard. So I was willing to get in at $20. I saw that, a little bit of a red flag, decided to go ahead and put my order in at $18.50 instead. Now, keep in mind, this is before the market is opened. I'm putting in a limit order. I will only get filled if the price is at that price or lower. If it opens up at $19 and runs away, I'm not in. So that was the risk I was taking. Went ahead, put the order in, Dan, clicked the submit button, got up, left, went to the gym. Probably 6:28 or something like that. Go to the gym, come back. I actually checked it on my phone while I was in the gym, and I noticed that the stock had opened at $16.27. So here I am thinking, I'm actually a little bit worried about that because I have no stop in place yet. Mm-hmm. I was a little bit worried, but I thought, all right, I got filled at what is probably a really good price. I don't think I'll lose too much money. I don't think this thing's going to get cut in half on opening day.
Right.
So it shouldn't be too bad, but I'm thinking I'm in. Get home, take a shower, get ready to roll. It's not until I'm actually physically here in the studio later, hours later, that I realized my order was not filled. Now, I've been having internet connectivity issues all week, really. Yesterday was terrible. It was the worst it's ever been. I mean, it was almost unworking, just unfunctional. This morning, I got all the way to the order screen so easily that I assumed that it was fixed and it was working. It was fine. However, just magically when I hit the submit button for my order, it doesn't go through. So, Dan, let's see how much money I missed out on. Now, it is a Thankful Thursday, and I'm thankful I did not lose any money today.
There you go.
I'll just go ahead and say that. I'm thankful I didn't lose any money today because I'd rather not lose any money on a given day if I had to choose randomly from all the options that exist out there. This stock, which opened at $16.26, today, Weibo, WB, which I've been telling you to take a look at all week, actually got all the way up to $24 a share, Dan. Right now, it's just under $22 a share. So my plan today to make an easy $5,000 before most people get up should have worked. However, it did not. I am flat. I own no shares. I hope someone out there at least
made some money
on this thing. Because I went crazy about that. I Facebooked it. We talked about it on the show multiple days. It was sitting right there. I mean, usually, this might be the easiest money ever made in an IPO. I mean, seriously, usually it's like an insider's game. You got to have big pockets to even get in on the IPO. Usually that, you know, the price will start out much higher.
Right. Usually if it comes out at 17, the first trade is at 30 or something.
Yeah.
Like that.
I mean, and you just have no chance to make any money. What's crazy about this one is the first people in the market actually got it for less than the IPO.
The IPO people.
You could get in there and buy your 100 shares, and you could have got it for a cheaper price than the IPO guys. That never happens. Ever. So I hope you took advantage of it. I'm really trying to be cool about this. It happens. It's the first time that's ever happened to me. Stuff happens, though. That's for sure. And I've experienced what I thought was just about everything in the market stand until today.
Here's a new one.
Here's another new one.
All kinds of ways.
Another lesson.
It doesn't work right.
Stick around until you get a confirmation, Credit. Come on. What is it, amateur hour? Jumping gigawatts. Anyway, we're streaming live on MrCredit.tv. If you'd like to see inside of the studio, Dan and I are in here. Board-certified tax attorney Jeffrey Kahn will be joining us at the bottom of the hour. A number of tax items we need to talk about today. And I'll start with this one, Dan, which doesn't have much to do with taxes, at least directly. Something you've been saying all along. We heard the Fed come out this week, Beige Book and all that stuff. And basically what we got from this is that the Fed will keep the interest rates low for the foreseeable future. And even in some instances in which the economy is recovering, they will continue to keep interest rates low.
Right. And that's all a factor of they just can't afford for rates to go up because of having so much debt on the books right now. If rates were to move up just 1%, it's so many billions of dollars in additional interest expenses that they would owe.
But is that ever going to change, though? I mean, that's the thing. We're not putting a dent in the debt here.
Right.
That's
and they have that blank check capability mentality. Now. They actually have that blank checkbook that they can just do whatever they want anymore. So I don't see that changing. So that could mean rates could stay very low for a very long time.
And that's something we really have to take a look at here and we really have to think about, because if that's the case, doesn't that change things? I mean, so many people are just expecting rates, you know, that they'll go up, that they have to go up.
Right.
Because they're so low, they've been higher before. Eventually, rates have to go up.
We've been hearing that for 5 years now.
And you're the one who's been saying, no, they don't.
Right.
They do not have to go up. There's nothing that says that rates must go higher. What I continue to see, in fact, is reasons why rates need to stay low, such as the debt, the national debt, which you mentioned, and the fact that, you know, if rates went up 1% or 2%, you know, then that would cause massive problems for the government.
Well, and we already saw that just in the mortgage industry.
Yeah.
Over the last year, rates were really low. Houses were low or lower. Houses started to recover because people were starting to buy them because rates were so low. Rates moved up just that little bit, even though they've come back down. It moved up just that little bit, and now all of a sudden it made those houses, even at low prices, unaffordable because of that tiny little move. And now magnify that towards trillions of dollars worth of debt and
$17 trillion, to be exact.
How's that payment feel when it goes up by even 0.5%?
I want to know is, do you think it's the Treasury Secretary who actually signs the check that goes to pay the debt? I mean, sure, it's a bunch of different checks, right? It's not just one.
I think they just print a coin. Remember? It's just one coin. They just hand it back and forth.
It's a platinum. Instead of a check, it's a platinum check, uh-huh. But basically just has a number. They just etch it in there,
right.
And that's what it's for. Okay. So you have the debt issue, which is a reason why rates will be suppressed. Keep in mind, they're in control of this. This is not a free market circumstance. That's what's scary to me. It's not like the market gets to necessarily dictate this in whole.
Right. Yeah, the market can still force rates up, and that's why you've seen the 10-year and the 30-year rates moving around a bit. That's the market trying to do things. But the Fed controls a lot of the power there that really dictates how far those rates can move.
They can affect that quite a bit. And here's the thing that really has me believing that the longer that we're on this financial crack, the longer we're going to need it. Mm-hmm. How do you equate this to something? You know, maybe it's like the binky with your babies, right? You know, the longer you let them have it, the harder it's going to be to take it away.
Correct.
Right? Mm-hmm. You got to get it out of there as quickly as possible. I mean, the first opportunity you have, you got to get them to quit using the binky.
Right.
You have to take it away and then never see it again. The longer you let them have it, the harder it is to take it away. It gets built in to the function of their life, similarly to the way that this financial stimulus has been built in. Now, keep in mind, we are tapering. Mm-hmm. The taper is happening, but that's keep in mind, that's mortgage bond purchases. That's really designed for mortgage rates. Mm-hmm. That doesn't have anything to do with the overnight lending window,
right.
or the overnight lending rate, or any of the other stuff the Fed might decide to do for financial stimulus. That's really a mortgage play only.
Right. And they, she came, Janet Yellen came out and said one of her previous times she got to speak, she left the door pretty open to where, oh, we're going to slow down this, but we're going to do other things. It sounded like we're just moving this shell across the board to another side. We're going to accomplish the exact same thing, but we're just not going to do it in this straightforward manner that we've been telling you we've been doing.
In other words, if there weren't any transparency at all, we're going to make it even more complicated to understand what we're doing. Here's the question, though, Dan. If it's a low rate environment that we are expecting now, and the longer it stays, the longer it probably will stay, mm-hmm. right? The low rate environments typically favor stocks.
Right.
Do we need to relook at our allocations here? Do we need to look at our financial plan and say, gosh, we might need to reallocate more funds towards stocks because they're going to want to go much higher in the coming years here?
It's a case-by-case basis for whatever your needs are, but that's definitely one of the strategies you can start looking at, or look at other income-producing investments, whether that's go buy a piece of real estate as a rental. Maybe you never wanted to do that, but that could kick off 6 or 7 or 8% a year.
Good point.
There all of a sudden is the income need that you're missing out on because your CDs are only paying a fraction of a percent.
Or maybe consider doing something because, you know, usually when we reallocate or rebalance, when you had a 30% year in stocks last year and you didn't have that kind of year in your bond portfolio, if you want to maintain your allocations, then you're going to have to shift money right. from your stocks to your bonds, which normally makes a whole lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Maybe we just don't do that for a year or two. Or is that getting too far outside of the plan?
No, that's part of it, because you're going to be reviewing. If you set up a plan properly, you're going to be reviewing it regularly. So you want to take a look at what's available at the time. And if your allocation maybe calls for 10% in a 30-year treasury or some higher yielding safe bond, and the rates are only 3%, and you're hoping for 5 or 6, obviously you're not going to do that.
Right.
You would maybe temporarily shift somewhere else where you can get a similar rate but not be locked up for 30 years in hopes that 30-year after a year or two is going to be ticking closer to where you want. And then if that's not happening, then you need to really start looking at what some of the other alternative options are as far as income producing.
Yeah, I think this is a really a sign to all of us that you have to take a look at allocations mm-hmm. and in any rebalancing efforts you might be considering. Especially, you know, here we are a couple days after tax day, which is usually a time where people who don't look at their investment statements for the entire year are looking at it, or they have looked at it in the last 30 days. This is something to really consider. Should you have a bigger allocation to stocks based on what we know about the Fed's predictions, or at least what they're saying about interest rates? It's very much along the lines of there's no reason for rates to go up.
Right.
We have no pressure for rates to go up. Yeah. Everything we're tracking as far as inflation is concerned is tame. And we don't care if one little thing in the entire index that we're looking at is tripled.
Right.
That doesn't matter to us.
You mean like gas prices?
Yeah, like, you know, gas or broccoli or whatever it is that people are buying that actually matters. They don't care about that. They mm-hmm. care about the whole thing. And they've made that very, very clear. And when you look at the whole picture, it really is hard to say that inflation exists.
Right.
It is. It's a tough argument. Mm-hmm.
Well, and depending on where you are in the country as well.
Also.
Where we're skewed a little bit here in San Diego, because our inflation rate for San Diego is definitely different than Iowa.
And that's the thing. They're looking at the entire country, right. and they're looking across an entire spectrum of items. And so when you do that, it is harder to identify.
Yeah. Most rates you ever hear about are taken from middle America, where they're the most level, calm spots. It's never taken from what's going on in New York or in L.A.
Yep. Exactly. And based on that rationale, I expect stocks to be the better side of the investment for probably a couple more years, at least. I mean, that's what's been since we've had this policy. That's what's worked. There's no reason to think that anything's going to change.
When I got assigned my crystal ball when I got into this industry, it was foggy when I got it. And they said, don't worry, it'll never clear up. So I have no idea.
Well, I feel confident that way. Anyway, it makes sense to take a look at those allocations if you're thinking about rebalancing or just wanting to make sure that you have the allocations that make sense for you. You can reach out to Dan Osgood directly through freeinvestmentaudit.com. That's what he does. It's 100% free. Or you can call 888-710-4911. All right, coming up, the IRS is now targeting IRA rollovers based on a U.S. tax court ruling. If you've rolled over an IRA or you're thinking about it, stick around. This could cost you a ton of money if you fit in this little box they've created for people they want to tax. It'll make you smarter than everyone else. Be right back.
Welcome back to the Lunch Hour with Mr. Credit. And today, it's Thankful Thursday on ESPN Radio 1700.
All right, welcome back. Thanks for hanging out. Mr. Credit here. You can find us everywhere, MrCredit.org, at Mr. Credit on Twitter, streaming the show live, MrCredit.tv. Easy to find. How about this one, Dan? Dan Osgood from FreeInvestmentAudit.com in the studio with me today. Jeffrey Kahn, board-certified tax attorney, joining us at the bottom of the hour. And this is really interesting. And I don't get into Forbes a lot, but this one was really interesting to me. The nation's seventh largest state pension can't afford a financial audit. Now, financial audit. What did I say? Audit. Financial audit. I'm still a little fired up. If you're watching the stream, you saw me punching the chair in the break. Didn't make money today when I should have. Now, it's hard to believe that there are no audited financial statements for the North Carolina state pension, which is the seventh largest public fund in the nation with $87 billion in assets. The writer of this article, Edward Sledel, I think, writes, "I'm unaware of any other public pension that completely lacks financial statements audited by either an independent accounting firm or the state auditor or both." This is unbelievable. Is it not?
It is. That. An audit is like the standard, especially from an independent source now, because of all the different fraud activities that have gone on in the financial world, that you absolutely have to have that to be compliant with just doing business and being able to operate that fund.
And if you own a pension fund or you own an aspect of a pension fund, you should be looking for that audit. Mm-hmm. You should be looking at that audit every year when it's done. Now, this is North Carolina, so obviously it doesn't affect us here in the state of California. But I don't know, Dan, maybe we can hook them up with you.
Oh, there you go.
FreeInvestmentAudit.com. Can you handle something like that?
It might not be free. $85 billion, and I'm sure it's a mess if they're not paying for the audit now.
That's kind of a red flag,
yeah,
eh?
I think so.
But this kind of identifies a couple of things. Number one, the value of the audit that you provide. And number two, the benefit to being kind of a small investor. Mm-hmm. Or small player, and the fact that you can get a lot more than you can if you're a big boy. If you're trying to buy 1 million shares of Weibo today, mm-hmm. you're going to run that thing up yourself.
Right.
If you're buying 1,000 shares, you can probably get filled within 5 cents of where the market's trading at.
Probably in one order, you could just get whatever the market is immediately at that time for 1,000 shares.
Maybe. Yeah, worst mm-hmm. case scenario, you're talking about a nickel maybe.
Right.
There's a lot of advantages to that. One of the big ones is obviously being able to get an investment audit and see all these things. We joke about the fact that the North Carolina Pension Fund, which is the seventh largest one in the nation, at 80-some billion dollars, we joke that they don't have the opportunity or can't afford to get a financial audit. But it's really a travesty. I mean, it's completely absurd that they're unable to do that. And we sit here and we say that, but then we also have to look ourselves in the mirror and go, are we auditing our own financial institutions? Because it's ridiculous to think that this pension fund wouldn't be doing it. But think about all the people out there who don't do it, who actually have access to do it for free.
Right. That's why it's out there.
That's your whole thing, is it not?
It's free. There's no hidden cost. I was joking about it wouldn't be free if I was helping South Carolina. But it really is a red flag as far as that pension plan, it makes you think that there's obviously things that they don't want found, whether it's big losses, inappropriate allocations. A lot of the things that I can uncover in these audits that I'm doing for individuals is the same thing. Is, well, gee, you've got five different mutual funds. That's great, but Apple is their largest holding in all five of those funds, so now 20% of your investments are in Apple. Are you comfortable with that? That type of thing that you can find out if you're appropriately allocated for what amount of risk you want to be taking or should be taking, as well as what everything costs.
I am drawing even more parallelisms here in the fact that they don't want to be audited. They are crying they can't afford it. I don't believe it. They don't want to be audited because something funky's going on. Similarly to why there are people who probably listen to the show who haven't contacted you for the free investment audit yet, because they don't want you to see what they're doing.
It's funny you mention that. I literally talked to a listener this morning who disclosed that exact same thing. They said, okay, I finally gotten to this point. It's one of those things, you know, my finances are in a mess, but I just don't want anyone to know the mess that I have. He said, but at this point, I've got a child on the way soon, so I need to sit down and start creating a plan as to how and why I'm doing things.
And that is, and a bravo to who at Golf Clap, whoever that was, golf clap to you, because at some point you do have to. Now, keep in mind, Dan's not going to shut you down. If you want to play in the market, you can carve out a piece to do that with. That's okay. That's okay. What you don't want to be doing is putting yourself in a situation where there are no boundaries, and all of a sudden you're buying Weibo sheepishly today at $24, and by the time it gets down to $8, you're fully invested in the thing. Because you're trying to make it all back.
Right. Letting emotion control what you're doing.
That can happen. That can happen. And so you just have to carve out a little piece. Go, all right, 10%. We're going to give you 10% of your portfolio. Go do whatever you want with it. You want to buy penny stocks? You want to buy BTCS? Kyle, go ahead. But do it in your 10%
fund. And it's not an ATM where you can't keep coming back and saying, I need another 10%.
Exactly.
that's where I'll be your conscience and say, no, that's probably not the wisest thing.
Remember when we decided to do that? Okay. So that's where the advantage is. If you're in that situation, I encourage you to get some courage and do this. It's something you need to do, plain and simple. Get the free investment audit. You'll be ecstatic after having done it. If you go through steps one and two of the life plan, the peace of mind will start to creep in and you will see why so many people have done it and why so many people enjoy doing it. Freeinvestmentaudit.com is the website. Freeinvestmentaudit.com. All right, Dan, we got Jeffrey Kahn coming on here in about 7 or 8 minutes. Mm-hmm. What you sent me here, at first I did not understand. Now I know why I didn't understand it, because it doesn't make any sense.
Correct.
But the IRS is now targeting people who have rolled over IRAs based on a U.S. tax court ruling. Tell us, what is going on here?
It's a little bit confusing because there's always, you talk about like taking a 401k out when you leave a company and rolling it into a self-directed IRA or some other type of retirement account. And that's totally legal. But there's this long-standing rule that you had a 60-day window to have that money move. So you could literally take a distribution in your hands, do whatever you wanted with that money for 59 days. As long as you put that whole amount into another retirement account, that didn't count as a distribution. It was just counted as a rollover. And that's kind of the overall view of this. It went before the IRS court, I guess.
Committee. U.S. Tax Court.
U.S. Tax Court. And they said their rules are now different. Even though everyone has been following these rules for years and years and years and abiding by them, they found because of one case where a couple did, it kind of looks like they were just trying to consolidate accounts and simplify their lives. But they moved money 3 different times during the course of a year, and they said, no, you're only entitled to one rollover per year. Not per account per year, but one rollover per year per individual. And that's where they were violating. They did 3.
And so,
and it used to be per account. It was what the initial interpretation has been for years.
And they didn't change the law. They didn't change the rule. They're just changing the way they're interpreting / enforcing it.
Correct.
Which is, that is so wrong on so many levels. It's hard for me not to have my head explode at this moment. Now, how many people actually do this, though? Because obviously it's going to create an enormous... tax burden.
Huge tax burden, because what happens is if you do more than one, they view whatever the second one, or, and I'm guessing they would pick the largest one, of course, to attack you on. You're going to pay ordinary income tax, so whatever your tax rate is, you're going to pay taxes on every dollar, plus you're going to pay a 10% penalty on top of that for every dollar.
I mean, this is something that could drive a stake mm-hmm. into someone's financial plan.
Right.
Imagine you roll over a $500,000 IRA.
Right.
A couple of them.
Yeah, 401k, you've been working at the company for 20 years, you got $500,000 built up, and you roll that out, and you don't realize that you had rolled that silly little $2,000 IRA you set up when you were 15 or when you were 20 when you first started working, and you could get a tax break. You rolled it into the same account first, and now you get the big bill from the $500,000.
$500,000, which, by the way, goes as turns into ordinary income, which is going to push you up. You're going to get taxed
40%. 40% federal.
I mean, you're going to get taxed all over the place. You're probably going to lose half of your money,
mm-hmm.
plus the penalty.
Correct.
I mean, it's just crazy.
There is a small silver lining. You can still do a direct transfer, which this is where it's a little gray. It's what's a transfer versus a rollover. They're both virtually the same thing. But you can take and do as many transfers as you want, as long as it's from custodian to custodian and you're carved out. So even if there's a lot of companies that will only pay it out to the owner.
Yeah.
So if you had an account, they would only write you the check. You can have them write the check to whoever the custodian is that you're going to have those assets deposited to.
Directly.
So it's never in the name of Derek Evans.
You never get the distribution.
Okay. Fidelity, Charles Schwab, TD Ameritrade, whatever the company is that you have that account, have the check made out in the name of that company, so it's never in your hands. It's never your money.
So the taxable event is when you receive that check.
Right.
Okay, that makes sense. Well, that's Dan Osgood from freeinvestmentaudit.com, where you can get your investments audited for free. He'll tell you what you own, what it's costing you, and ultimately how much risk you have on the table. Everyone should do this free investment audit. .com. We have Jeffrey Kahn, who will be on the horn. When we come back, we'll ask him where the taxable event is there, and if this is actually, if the IRS is now using this IRA rollover thing, as a way to trigger audits as well. Stick around. We'll make you smarter than everyone else. It's guaranteed.
Welcome back to the Lunch Hour with Mr. Credit. And today, it's Thankful Thursday on ESPN Radio 1700.
Welcome back. Thank you for hanging out, Mr. Credit here. Streaming live on MrCredit.tv, on Twitter at Mr. Credit. Dan Osgood in the studio with me today. We're now joined by board certified tax attorney Jeffrey Kahn from the Kahn Tax Law Team. Jeff, are you there, sir?
Yes, I am. How you doing, Derek?
Doing very good. Glad to have you on the phone today. A number of items I would like to try to get to today, Jeff. I know your time is limited. Have you seen this deal with the IRA rollovers the IRS is now targeting?
Well, I know that the IRS has been scrutinizing this for a long period of time, and it's easy for them to do it because the IRA custodians or administrators, they're actually reporting these transfers, these withdrawals over to the IRS. So it makes it very easy for the IRS computers to check and see, hey, was there a timely rollover? And, you know, maybe if not, let's go spit out a notice. And sometimes, yeah, that could lead to, just full-blown audits.
Gosh, I mean, this is crazy to me because they never changed the rule, right, Jeff? I mean, they just the tax court ruling was just that they're changing the way they're interpreting it, right?
Right, right.
I mean, doesn't that just open Pandora's box completely for all of the tax laws that are out there?
Well, that's usually what happens, you know, with a court procedure, or sometimes even IRS will interpret the law differently or interpret it in a certain manner and say, this is how we're going to go and apply it.
Yeah, unbelievable. Well, I sure hope this hasn't taken place to anyone. Is this one of those situations, Jeff, where there is just absolutely no remedy whatsoever? If someone has done this, hasn't made a timely rollover, has made multiple rollovers in a year, Is there any hope for them? Can you help someone in that situation at all?
Typically, I would have somebody come with me because you never know. There could be something I can do, even if it's to get an abatement of a penalty. I've had clients before where they've come into situations, for example, one client recently that is part of a full-blown audit. They had a distribution with an untimely rollover, and we were actually able to develop a case for the IRS where the underpayment penalty in connection with that got abated. So the early withdrawal penalty didn't get abated because that, by law, IRS has to tack on. That's a 10% penalty. But in terms of the underpayment penalty, we got that abated. And so that's always a possibility.
Okay. So there's always a chance, then, is what you're telling me, that you can
yep.
improve the situation. All right. Well, if you've been through this, if you're rolling over multiple IRAs, if you did it already and didn't think there was any potential consequences, you'd like to speak with Jeff, you can get a free consultation. And by the way, a tax resolution plan, should you need one, $500 value. It is free. You can call Jeffrey Kahn toll-free at 866-494-6829. So that's a toll-free number to get your free consultation, 866-494-6829. Jeff, I'd like to play a little game with you.
Okay.
It's a game, just a simple game, fact or fiction, how not to get audited this tax season. Yahoo Finance published what they are calling the top three things to keep from getting an audit this tax season, or how not to get audited this tax season. I wanted to run through those really quick with you.
Okay.
Number one they put on here was be honest. Now, this is via the Wall Street cheat sheet, by the way. They say honesty is a pretty good policy in general, but the last person you want to catch you lying is an IRS agent. Do you agree that being honest will help someone from being audited?
Well, I could tell you this. If you do lie to a federal agent, okay, and they catch you doing that, it is a federal crime to make a knowingly false statement to a federal official. So you don't want to be telling lies to the government that they later can prove that you lied to them. So in that regard, you want to be honest with them. But I typically find that since you're the target of the IRS, better that you send your representative, such as myself, to go before the IRS, because I may not necessarily have the answers to their questions, and at least I can defer a response after consulting with my client.
Right, and you are the buffer, therefore, between the individual and the IRS, and that's where a huge value comes from board-certified tax attorney Jeffrey Kahn. And I want to disagree with this one, not that because being honest is a bad idea, but being honest isn't going to keep you from getting audited.
Correct.
I mean, there's no correlation whatsoever between being honest in general and not getting audited. So I'm going to cry fiction on
right.
number one, although I would highly encourage you do be honest with regard to
right.
filing your taxes.
Well, I think with regard to that element, it's a little bit ambiguous, because if you're in front and center with an IRS agent, well, you're already being audited. So,
right.
You know, whatever you did on the return and what you're going to be saying to the IRS are two different things, because you already got audited. So, but I think the thing to keep in mind is when you are filing a tax return, you are filing under penalties of perjury, knowing that, you know, it's true and accurate and complete to the best of your knowledge.
Right, and that's key. Number two on this list of the top three things to not get audited this tax season, we're playing fact or fiction with board-certified tax attorney Jeffrey Kahn. Number two is be careful with deductions. It's not every day someone will tell you that donating to charity can be dangerous, but if you're worried about an audit, you need to make sure a little forethought goes into your charitable contributions. And it goes on to say some other things. Being careful with deductions, Jeff, would you say that is going to keep you from getting audited potentially?
Yeah, I would say taxpayers have got to keep in mind there are certain types of deductions that are like a target of the IRS, because the IRS knows taxpayers will abuse it, will be overgenerous, very lax in terms of keeping records to update the various expenses. So depending upon the amount and the type of expenses, that will increase your risk for an audit.
Okay. Makes sense to me, and obviously There are probably some guidelines, Jeff, that people can follow with regard to this on a case-by-case basis, where, you know, you just want to make sure that you don't go a little too crazy with some of the things that are in there. And that's where it comes down to your tax preparer. And by the way, I saw a story that where these guys did an audit of tax returns and found that 17 out of 19 paid tax preparers got the taxes wrong. This was actually from the GAO, the Government Accountability Office report. And it was just a little undercover study that they did of 19 paid preparers. They did this in February. They were chosen randomly amongst different states in the country. And 17 of them got it wrong. But in the end, Jeff, it doesn't matter, right? If you sign, it's your tax return. You're the one who's on the hook.
That's right. Exactly. And even if the preparer made a mistake, doesn't matter. You still owe the tax on that.
And of course you do, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Number three on the list here. This one I find to be very interesting. And I'm really curious about your opinion.
Yeah.
This might be the first piece of substance this article has actually had. But number three, they say, of ways to avoid an audit this year is to file online. Is that true?
You know, I believe that is true because, first of all, by filing online, you're going through a kind of like an automated computer process that's checking the information. And then, of course, it's already in electronic format with the IRS. Whereas when you file a paper return, somebody at the IRS has got to input that information. And they can make an error just inputting things in.
That's a good
point. Wrong numbers, putting it on wrong lines of the return, stuff like that. And, of course, somebody's got to check it. And, paper return could actually raise your chances for an audit versus, filing online.
That's absolutely brilliant stuff from board-certified tax attorney Jeffrey Kahn from the Kahn Tax Law Team. You can get a free consultation with Jeff. I've used him personally for multiple issues from the EDD to the FTB to the IRS. If you have a tax problem, get your free consultation with Jeff, and you can get a tax resolution plan. That's a $500 value free. Just mention Mr. Credit when you call toll-free at 866-494-6829, 866-494-6829. Jeff, appreciate your time today, my friend.
All right. Thanks, Derek.
Great stuff. It's board-certified tax attorney Jeffrey Kahn just shooting us straight. And I tell you, these things, I mean, Dan, I know you know this about me. Most people do. Deathly afraid of the IRS. Mm-hmm. I feel so much better now that I know Jeff Kahn.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, having gone through the thing I had to go with the EDD, Nikki's thing with the FTB, all the stuff we use him for, oh, my goodness. It is a nightmare when you try to deal with these tax agencies. Jeffrey Kahn is awesome.
Peace of mind having someone like him in your corner.
Boy, I tell you what. I hope Jeffrey Kahn stays healthy for a very long time. I hope he's alive for as long as I am. We love you, Jeff. All right, coming up. We know there's a little funny math out there when it comes to investments. And sometimes you can lose the benefit of certain investments when you cluster or you buy mutual funds or ETFs. I want to find out if there's something like that going on in the ETF world with specifically dividend ETFs. We've got Dan Osgood, my financial planner, in studio. When we come back, we'll find out. We'll make you smarter than everyone else.
Welcome back to the Lunch Hour with Mr. Credit. And today, it's Thankful Thursday on ESPN Radio 1700.
Welcome back. Thank you for hanging out. Mr. Credit here. Dan Osgood in the house. Doing everything we can to make you smarter than everyone else. Dan, we've talked about this before with bonds. You buy a bond mutual fund, you lose a little bit of what's nice about a bond.
Correct.
Because you never get that guaranteed payback at maturity.
Right.
It's all just kind of slushed together in one big fund. Mm-hmm. So you kind of are in one sense, but then you aren't in another.
Well, and you get the fluctuation in the, not dividends, but the interest payments that the bonds are producing. That can fluctuate. So if you need $1,000 a month, it might work at first, and then all of a sudden you're only getting 900 a month, and then 800, and then you're starting to run into a big problem.
Yeah, so you know, the bond mutual funds almost don't make sense to even invest in. Now, I'm curious about these dividend ETFs, mm-hmm. Because you have ETFs, which are essentially like a mutual fund. They're pools of stocks. They go for, you know, dividend stocks. Is there something in that idea, the concept of having an ETF that has a bunch of dividend stocks, where you also lose some of the advantages like the bond mutual funds?
Not nearly to the same magnitude as you would on a bond fund, because if you're going to own these dividend stocks individually and the market just starts to roll over and all the stocks are going down, it's going to affect that whole portfolio because they're still equities. And there's no guarantee that they're ever going to get back, whether you own the individual stock or the ETF. Where with a bond, you know you're going to get your full face value when that bond matures.
Right.
And that's the advantage you have over owning a fund or an ETF or an ETF for the bond side. But it definitely not the same. Maybe you could get caught. Maybe you would only buy a handful if you were buying the individual stocks versus the big pool, where that diversification could actually negatively impact you because it could reduce your overall yield. And then you could have some really poor performers that drag it down a little more than maybe the handful that you would select on your own.
Yeah, and I think when you look at a dividend ETF or any kind of conglomeration like that of stocks, you have to really look at what do they own.
Right.
Because dividend ETF, if it's designed to catch your eye with the dividend figure, they're probably going to own some stocks that are paying these stupid high dividends mm-hmm. that have very little chance to actually pay those dividends in the long haul.
Right. So short term, we saw that a few years back in the shipping industry. All these shipping companies were paying like 8, 10, 12% dividends. And then all of a sudden they weren't paying any dividends.
Right.
So that was great right up until it wasn't.
It's kind of funny because a lot of in those situations, you know, the CEOs and a lot of people on the board own tons of shares. Mm-hmm. They were just paying themselves, you know, a bunch of money,
right.
Paying all the shareholders, but paying themselves a bunch of money at a tax preferred rate, which is brilliant. But they're going to do that when they have the money available, and then when they don't have it, they have bad months or bad quarters or whatever, then they're just going to take it off.
Right.
So when you look for, I think if you want to actually look at a dividend ETF for the sake of investing in a diverse fund with solid dividend-paying stocks, you got to really look at not just the top 10 holdings, but go a little bit deeper than that.
Right. Find out where the high flyer is, what that company is, and understand that that could negatively impact your yield in the near future.
Yeah, and does it even make any sense to not just buy the Dow
right.
or something like that, mm-hmm. which you could also do, or the S&P for that matter? You know, there are definitely some stocks out there that are paying some pretty nice dividends. You know, I mentioned Freeport-McMoRan a while back. It's one that I picked up that was paying around 4%. The stock is up 10% since then, so it's not quite paying 4% anymore. But there are some really good companies out there that pay pretty nice little dividends.
Oh, yeah.
And so if you want to be a little on the safer side, but you want to be in equities, maybe looking at some of these dividend ETFs makes sense. Or maybe, Dan, you just buy your own little pool of stocks.
Right. Right. And look at, you don't have to get trapped by what some fund is in. You could look at some of these publicly traded REITs.
Good point.
That are backed by real estate. That's a dividend paying stock that doesn't fall into the normal classification of the S&P 500 dividend paying stocks.
REITs really have gotten a bad name, haven't they?
Mm-hmm.
They really have.
Well, I think a lot of it is tied to the fact that there's so many non-publicly traded ones.
The non-traded ones.
That are... Guess what? It's not going to work out. You're going to lose your money. That situation. That I understand why there's a negative light being shined.
Well, I just wonder, you know, if that's sometimes that negativity is where the opportunity is. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we're at that point right here because real estate has done really well.
Right.
You know, I don't know. Commercial real estate is a totally different ball game, especially these non-traded REITs where that you know they might own properties in lots of places. For some people, it's a great idea. It mm-hmm. makes sense. But if that's what you're looking for, if you're looking for income, it still seems to me that, you know, bonds, buying actual bonds is the safer way to go.
Well, it's definitely a lot clearer when you buy a bond, what you have and what you're always going to have versus when you buy a dividend paying stock, there's no guarantee that they'll continue paying the dividend perpetually. They can carve it out at any time. If times get tough, they just stop paying a dividend to save money.
Yeah.
Where with the bond, they that can happen, but it's much less frequently that something like that would happen, where they would just stop paying. And generally, depending on the type of bond, there's a workout where they restructure some things and get that interest that's owed back to you.
So for security and safety, bonds still the number one place to go.
Yes.
I got a straight answer. Yeah, you thought about it.
I hope no one's listening.
You put that through your disclaimer filter. I can tell. Great stuff from Dan Osgood, my financial planner, with freeinvestmentaudit.com. You can actually check him out tomorrow. The Portfolio Doctors, him and Steve Bick, will be in here right on ESPN 1700, 2 to 3 o'clock. Highly encourage you to listen to that show every week. These guys are great. They divulge awesome information. And I understand Steve is a little fired up for tomorrow's show. And if you know Steve, he's got the South African accent. When he gets fired up about something, get ready. I mean, get your notebook out, get the pen and paper out, and take notes. Fantastic show. Appreciate it, everybody. Taylor ran a great show today. Dan for being here. Jeff for calling in. We will be back again tomorrow at noon to make you smarter than everyone else. It's guaranteed. We'll see you then.
If you would like to contact Mr. Credit or access any free offers mentioned on the show, just go to MrCredit.org. That's MrCredit.org.